Welcome back to episode 6 of the Passive House podcast. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh in Auckland, New Zealand.
And I'm Zach Semke in Seattle, Washington.
And this week we've got a great interview from Simone Schinkel. Simone is a Passive House architect in Melbourne, Victoria. Now, Melbourne has had a bit of a hard time recently, as have a lot of the rest of the world, but Simone is doing some great things. And I guess one of the things that stands out for me from this interview is about the state of housing in New Zealand and Australia and other parts of the world as well. And it takes people that have knowledge about things like passive house or have experience of good quality housing from overseas to gradually change the industry there. Any thoughts from you on this one before we get underway, Zach?
Well, you will hear about it, but the interesting conversation that you have with her about the cost delta between passive house and non-passive house, and the point that she makes that it really, you know, a lot of it has to do with what are the regulations, because what are you comparing it to? So the floor that you're describing in terms of standard practice in New Zealand and Australia is different from Germany and even different from North America. So
yeah,
it's so a different,
there is a bigger gap there.
Yeah. Although it's easier to get to passive house, some could argue, in the climate.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Well, let's get into it. This is my chat with Simone Schinkel from Melbourne, Victoria.
Thank you, Simone, for joining us. Really, really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go back to how you got started. Firstly, as an architect, you did your training back in Germany. Is that correct?
Yeah, but maybe I should say first, I studied architecture in Germany, but I'm not registered in Australia as an architect, so I'm not allowed to call myself an architect.
Right.
that's quite important. But yeah, I studied architecture in Germany, and I came to Australia in 2007. And at the beginning, it was quite interesting. Everyone told me, you know, it's Australia. You don't need much insulation. You don't need double glazing and things like that. And I think maybe for the first few weeks, I believed that. And then I started questioning it. Because I thought it was really cold inside our apartment. And then I started, I went to a talk in the city that talked about the newest and best inventions about energy efficient and sustainable design. And that's kind of when it hit me. I thought, okay, that's what I learned at uni a few years ago. So, you know, what's going on? And that's when I realized that my education was quite different to what people had learned here. Mm. And, you know, everything about passive solar design and energy efficiency and thermal bridges, which back then was a complete unknown term here in Australia, pretty much. And was really a big eye-opener. And luckily, my former boss back then, he loved everything German and everything energy efficient. And so he started promoting actually sustainable design and referring to, you know, the German designer. And we started doing homes pretty much following rather the German principles, you know, how you build homes. And and I think from that point on, I started to look more into it and went to a lot of courses and did workshops and stuff like that. And one thing is I was always interested in nature and passionate about the environment, even as a little child. And therefore it was always part of what I wanted to do. And then after my first job, I moved on to another designer who was only doing energy efficient and sustainable homes.
Right.
And, yeah, that was definitely absolutely amazing. And I learned a lot from him. And in
was that a choice of yours to only go and work for people who are doing those sorts of things?
Yes.
Because by that stage you'd done some other training, hadn't you? You picked up with what was around at that time if someone like yourself wanted to do more sustainable type design?
It was mainly the star weighting. So I did the course for the NAFAS or the energy weighting assessment and section J assessments, and all those kind of things. So I started to do those and obviously listened to a lot of whatever talks and things, but also got newspapers or magazines from Germany because obviously they were still quite, quite a bit advanced.
So then
2010, I started my own side business back at the time while I was still working full time. And I was mainly doing energy ratings, often for other big architectural firms. And I must say, it was sometimes quite shocking to see what people tried to get, to get approved. And no idea about double glazing or anything, just trying to use single glazing wherever they could. And yes, some designs were quite shocking. And
so this is using First Rate?
First Rate.
And doing building thermal performance assessments.
Exactly.
And were you doing NatHERS at this stage as well?
Yes, partially, yeah, back then when I started, I think it was still the 5 stars and then it transferred to 6 stars. But even when it was the 5 stars, there were always people who tried to get around that. And similar later on with the 6 stars. And for me, it just didn't make sense why people would design those homes that are completely the wrong way around, you know, no living areas or anything facing north. And yeah, sometimes it was quite confusing to me that people didn't have the basic education or the basic understanding and how to design an energy efficient home. But
What do you put that down to? What do you think that's all about?
I think education, it all goes back to education. I think there's just not enough emphasis on designers or architects courses about energy efficiency. I mean, I hope it's better by now, but especially back then, 2010 or 13, 14, there wasn't much about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't guarantee it, unfortunately. Because so let's go back again to your university degree. It was a diploma in engineering architecture. Is that right?
So back then when I studied, we didn't have a bachelor or a master. It was kind of something, if you translate it word to word, it would be something like a degree engineer in architecture. So yeah. My school was quite technical based. So almost more like proper school time. You know, we would sit there every day from 9 till whatever, 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and we would have lots of topics about building physics, structural engineering, a lot of details, obviously also designing and things. But a major subject was as well energy efficient sustainable design and all those kind of things. And we would learn about whatever heating and cooling systems and all those kind of things. So it was quite heavily based around technical items and not just designing nice things.
And do you remember what the building science components included?
Oh, yeah, a lot of things about calculating thermal bridges and transfer of heat and how to get humidity out of the house. And the funny thing is our professor, he was quite an old school guy. He was extremely strict and his building physics exams were a nightmare. So typically each year, 60 or 70% would fail.
Wow.
And we had to calculate a lot of things and it was quite difficult. And back then he was stressing, you should not have plants in your house or animals that produce too much water and blah, 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 blah. So he was quite extreme about that. And back then we were laughing. But even back then when I studied, 2006? I finished. And back then he was saying that, in order to get the humidity out of your house, you have to open your windows several times a day, like proper cross ventilation, not just, an awning or a tilt window. And he was going on about it, how important it is and all those kinds of things.
Yeah. And so this is everyone who studies architecture was getting this sort of building science background along with their design and the sort of the flows and the aesthetics side of things.
Exactly. Or more so on our University of Applied Science. So like I said, it was more technical based. Back then in Germany, we had university and the University of Applied Science. And the students that went to let's call it normal university, that would do less science and things than we do.
Right.
But, yeah.
And when did you first hear about Passive House?
Oh, quite early on, I think already back in Germany back then, but I didn't look into it that much. And then,
because it would have been relatively well established by this is sort of early 2000, 2001, 2006. There would have been quite a few passive house buildings certified around the place in Germany at that time, weren't there?
There were. We didn't talk about it too much at uni, which I find in hindsight a bit sad. So there wasn't an extra subject or topic about it. But then when I was in Australia, especially, let's say starting from 2010 on, I got quite interested in it. And then when I started my own business, I thought, oh, you know, that's amazing. I definitely want to do the course. And but then, I fell pregnant and I had babies. And it was a bit hard to do the course because back then in the day, you had to sit there for 2 weeks to do the course. So it took me a little bit longer.
It's an intense course.
Yeah, before I could actually do the course. Luckily, nowadays, especially in the current climate, you can do the courses online, which is amazing. So I think it's opening up to a much broader audience, you know, countryside or like me, moms with kids. And which is good.
Prior to doing your passive house training, and that's relatively recent that you've done that in Australia.
Yep.
It sounds like you were able to find jobs and companies and therefore clients who were interested in the same sorts of things as you were, that sustainability and energy efficiency, even though you'd been a bit shocked when you first arrived in Australia about the state of those houses. But was that a niche, a smaller group of people that you think who were interested in going a bit above the normal?
Yeah, potentially. So definitely the interest is growing larger. But even when I started back then in 2013, I've always been quite passionate about sustainable design, and I'm also quite passionate about educating people to make better choices. And back then I had started already writing blog posts and articles about it and posting it online and having articles in magazines or doing talks. And that's how people started finding me. And and luckily, therefore, people that usually came to me, they came to me because they wanted to do energy efficient or sustainable design. So I didn't have to do that much convincing on my part because, you know, that they came because they knew that I was passionate about sustainable design, and that's why they wanted me to help them with their homes.
So have you, since now that you've developed your brand, are you finding that the case all the time? Do you ever have to turn clients away and say, look, I'm just not the right person for you?
Partially. But I mean, most people come to me because they want an energy efficient home. And often people come to me, they want, let's say, a passive solar design home. And then I won't push them away. I keep telling them about passive house and why I think passive house it's superior to a normal passive solar designed home. And a lot of people, they suddenly, it's like a light bulb moment and they understand it and they want to do it, you know, they want to build towards passive house. But even for the people that don't want to go the whole way, I will still apply all my knowledge and everything I know about it and try to get the houses as airtight as possible. And then also look after the ventilation and everything, making sure they don't get any mold or humidity issues.
A couple of things on your website. I really like under your services at the moment. Most people just list a whole bunch of services there, but I like the way that you've got some articles referred to there on different things that start with the question why we love interactive design, why we love multi-generational, why we should consider sustainable development. I find that very intriguing, and those articles that you talk about are a great resource for anyone to delve into. One of the topics that you do cover there is that clarification between passive solar and passive house. Yep. How does that conversation usually go with clients who are coming across passive house for the first time?
I mean, the big difference is, passive solar design is all good and nice, but for once it relies really heavily, heavily on solar access and thermal mass. And in some instances, when depending on the site, you might not have any great solar access, or you might not be able to do a concrete slab or something. So that is one part that comes into play. The next one is, and I think that's the biggest issue with the energy weightings, it's just a theoretical weighting on paper. And it has nothing to do with the actual performing of the house and how it's built. And I guess the big issue there is the performance gap, that no one is really checking how the house, you know, if the house is really built airtight and if the insulation, everything is done properly. Whereas on the other hand, in my opinion, passive house is, or the actual passive house standard is the only way how to get a guaranteed performance and get a real energy efficient and healthy home. And that's then how we start the conversation. And then, you know, I explain a bit more science and I send them to this this one video that's been shared a lot, Passive House in 90 Seconds.
Yeah,
I think it's definitely a great starting point to get a bit of an idea of the science behind it. And I think the good thing is there are a lot of, there's really a lot of science and knowledge behind the standard. But, you know, you as a client don't have to worry about it because there are specialists looking after it and doing the calculations and making sure everything works. So that there is less guesswork. You really get what's on paper, what you're paying for.
Do you ever get people questioning the relevance of a passive house, which is essentially, you know, it's originated from Europe, hot, colder climate? How do people feel about that being applied in a hot, drier climate such as Australia?
Not so much, I guess. I mean, some people, they might doubt it, but I guess the good thing is, it's like you said, our climate here is much, much milder, but that means we get away with much less insulation and with, you know, we don't need quadruple glazing or something. We get around with double glazing, with good double glazing. And also the amazing thing is, if you have a passive house, you barely need any heating and cooling. Whereas in Europe, in most countries, they still need some sort of heating system within the house. So we definitely, you definitely get around with much, much less than in Europe.
And obviously cost would come up as an issue. How do you address the issue of extra cost up front?
Yeah, the extra cost, it definitely is a little bit more, but it's really difficult how to compare. So how long is a piece of string and really comparing apples with apples. So a lot of people compare passive house with volume builders, and that's something you can't really compare, or not just yet, because there's a huge, huge difference. But if you look at a custom designed home or kind of a boutique home and then compare it to a passive house, the difference between that isn't that huge, or I should rather say it shouldn't be that huge. You know, like especially back then when I was doing energy weightings for other people, I found it quite frustrating. I was looking at houses that were whatever $2 million builds, and they didn't want to spend any money on double glazing, but they would have a $200,000 kitchen. And that's just something beyond me. But I think it goes back a lot to education. And, you know, I think it's designers and the architects' responsibility to educate the clients a bit. So what I keep telling our clients is that, you know, something like the windows or the insulation, I would never, ever save on, because that's something you most likely will never, ever touch again. Yeah. However, your kitchen or your bathroom or the light fittings, you might change again or update in 10 or 15 years. So if the budget gets tight, concentrate on a really great shell, you know, make sure everything works, and then get your whatever IKEA lighting or Bunnings or Beacon lighting light fittings, obviously. LED, you know, that's quite important. But similar with kitchen, you know, get a flat pack kitchen and get a cabinetry maker to build some whatever nice feature shelving around it. So no one will even notice it's an IKEA or a Bunnings kitchen. You know, things like that. And also what we try on most of our projects is to use off-the-shelf products wherever we can. Because obviously, as soon as you start with everything custom-made, custom-made claddings, custom-made furniture, prices can explode. So, you know, rather spend that money on a really great and high-performing home.
You mentioned, as I said, interactive online design.
Yep.
So I am assuming that that's something that you encourage in most of your projects, yes, where possible.
Yep.
Who typically gets involved in those meetings, and when do they occur?
Pretty much all the clients. That's how we do our design. You know, when we're not in a situation like this, we do meetings in the office as well, where we look with the clients at our big screen. But the whole idea about is that it's interactive. So we share either, you know, the big TV or the screen with the clients, and we look at the floor plans together. And we might make rooms bigger or smaller, or change door swings, change windows. And it gets even more interesting when we go to the 3D design, because we can swirl around the house. We can try different roof forms just with a few clicks, or different colors, different claddings. We can do sun studies to see if we can get the winter sun into the house while keeping summer sun out. And doing it that way has quite a few advantages. There are less things lost in translation. Because, you know, the typical way would be, let's say you print out the floor plans, you do a few markups, and then you meet again 2 weeks later, and the clients might say, oh, that's not what I meant. And, you know, straight away you lost 2 weeks. Whereas if you do it together on the spot, you can sort out issues straight away. Because, you know, the clients might say, I really want the garage here. And then I can explain, actually, we can't do it because of this and this building regulation. So, you know, let's straight away find a solution to get it sorted. And then the next thing is the client understands much better how the design came across. You know, why are things where they are, and also the entire look and feel of the house. And ultimately, I think every person is really different, because what might be my ideal kitchen might not be their ideal kitchen. So in the process of working together, we can make sure the house is the way the clients want it, while still making sure we comply with all regulations and the house is as energy efficient and sustainable as we can.
I see on your projects page, you've got a few rendered images of current projects that are under construction. Do you do 3D renders for both interior and exterior for most of your buildings?
It depends on what the clients choose in terms of service, because obviously render images and doing photorealistic renderings does take a bit of time.
Yeah.
So we work with Revit, which is kind of a 3D program anyway. So during the normal process, we always look at the 3D model together, but it's a bit more sketchy-like not as detailed. But then depending on what service package the clients choose, then we also provide then proper 3D renderings and stuff as well.
Yeah, because I imagine that for putting that up on the screen and sharing it, it would be quite valuable for people to actually kind of get the feel for walking through the home at that really early stage, rather than seeing it as drawings on a piece of paper.
It makes a huge difference, especially when you work with raked ceiling or highlight windows or things like that people can see where the light is coming in or how it all feels. That makes a huge difference.
And you've got a bit of a team there now. You've grown the business up from, I assume it was just you when you started, but
yes.
now you've got, what, eight of you?
I just actually got a signed contract back last week. So I have a new graduate of architecture interior designer starting with me in June, which is
exciting.
Quite exciting.
Excellent.
And that will bring then the total, including me, to eight.
And so does that allows you to do more and more of that, the complete service? So you've got some interior designers there as well, and you're doing the BIM and the detailed design, everything in house.
Yep, but also it allows me more time to do what I'm really passionate about, which is, you know, talking with you or, you know, other people, doing talks and webinars and things like that, and writing articles. Because like I said, I'm really passionate about educating others and helping others to live a more sustainable life. And so therefore, it's great that I have a great team that can take over some, you know, a lot of the drafting work, so that I can, you know, work on what I'm really passionate about.
Absolutely. And I think that's so important as well, because it's great that you're passionate about it, but I think it's such an important part of helping change the industry for the better for everyone, is to just to let other people know. Because it's not like you're hard selling, pushing stuff on people that they're not going to really want. When, like you say, when they get to learn about it, it's generally what people actually want, and that it's just a matter of them not knowing about it beforehand.
Exactly. And we're definitely not forcing clients into something. So during the design process, we typically get quite a few quotes for them. We get quotes for window manufacturers and, you know, being it certified passive house windows, double glazed, triple glazed, but also high-end, more normal double-glazed windows. And we wouldn't force anything on the clients, but we give them the choice on, you know, these are great products. And, you know, and then we work closely with the builder and see how much does the budget allow. You know, can they go certified windows? Can they go triple glazing or double glazing? And I think, you know, there is no point designing an amazing, beautiful home that the clients ultimately can't afford. So we make a big effort out of it, trying to work closely with the with builders early on that whatever we design is within budget, or even if it goes slightly over budget, that there are ways how the clients potentially could scale down a little bit. You know, for instance, I keep saying, you know, if the quotes come back and they're hundreds of thousand dollars over, there's nothing you can scale back. You have to change the design. If it comes back, whatever, 10, 20, or potentially 50 over, maybe you can do a few things. You know, you can look at, you know, buying all the fixtures and fittings and appliances yourself, or you might manage demolition yourself or landscaping yourself, or do the build and ropes yourself. You know, there are some things how you can scale back, but yeah, you could not scale back hundreds of thousands of dollars on a build.
You mentioned supply of products there. How do you see that in the 10 years that you've been running Gruen? What have you seen in the industry in Australia about the supply of those energy efficient products, windows and ventilation systems, those sorts of things?
It's gotten much, much better. There's so much more competition on the market and a lot more affordable options. So it's back in the days, if you were building a house and you wanted triple glazed windows, you would have needed to pay over $100,000 for it. But the sad reality is a lot of people only have $500,000 or $600,000 to build a home. So they can't spend $100,000 on windows. Even, you know, it would be great if they could, but sadly most people can't. And so luckily there are options now there that can help you to build a highly energy efficient home, even when you build a bit on a budget.
Yeah. And projecting that forward, where would you like to see things in the next, say, 5 to 10 years in Australia?
Yep. So I think what I mentioned before is, there are quite a few changes that have to happen, but I guess the biggest is the performance gap. You know, like I said before, that the current star rating is just a theoretical rating. So I think that there has to be a lot more control about the build quality, and that homes are tested, that they're actually built how they are on paper. And obviously, you know, passive house standard would be great, you know, if that could be, you know, come more mainstream. But I guess you probably heard that I'm a huge fan of the passive house standard, but as sad as it is, most people just can't afford to get a custom design home. So the really important change that has to happen is that the entire building regulations have to change, so that even when you get a volume builder to build your home, a display home, that you have a highly energy efficient and healthy home. And that would be kind of the change I wanted to see, that everyone has the right and the chance to get a energy efficient and a healthy home.
And I like the way through your articles that you don't push passive houses as the only way for everyone, and you acknowledge some of the benefits of passive solar design. You know, you talk about thermal mass, but you also say that it has its place, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And that's quite refreshing, because I think a lot of people get hung up on it's got to be one or got to be the other, and that's not necessarily helpful for the bigger picture.
But having said that, the one important thing that I really have to stress about: if you aim for an airtight home, you have to look after the ventilation. Just opening your windows won't be enough, or you get massive mold issues. So the projects that we're doing, that, you know, even if they're not coming close to passive house, if they're trying to get airtight, you need some sort of ventilation, or you will get massive problems in the future.
That's a good tip. Where's your geographic extent? Do you provide services across the whole of Australia or mostly? Yeah,
we do. I mean, most of our projects definitely are in Victoria, a lot of countryside mm-hmm. Victoria, which also works well with our remote meetings. But some inner city, but we've done projects in Queensland, currently doing a hempcrete house on the Gold Coast as well, and a passive house in Canberra. So, yeah, a little bit here.
Awesome.
And there. Slowly expanding.
Any passive house retrofits on the way?
Not quite yet, no.
No, they're. I think they're probably some of the toughest projects to.
They are tough, yeah.
To do,
yeah.
But you do. You've got some beautiful renovations that you have done, yes. from your design services, yeah. Which have been. I mean, there's some great examples there. People should go and have a look of homes where there obviously quite a lot of heritage value, but then adding some contemporary features and performance on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah, we've definitely done a few renovations, or even our own unit we renovated, and typical two-bedroom brick veneer unit, no insulation whatsoever, single-glazed aluminium yeah. windows. And I think we had a star rating of 0.7, and we got it, we insulated everything, floors, walls, ceiling, installed double-glazed UPVC windows, and I think we got it to 8.4 stars or something like that.
Wow.
So
that's very impressive.
Yeah, it's definitely nice, especially now being home all day, that it's nice and comfy inside.
Yeah. Where's the best place for people to look at everything that you do?
Yep. So either our website, which is kruenecodesign.com.au. Kruen, for those that don't know, it's actually the German word for the color green. So mm-hmm. It's G-R-U-E-N. Or, of course, we have our Facebook page or our Instagram page as well.
And you're pretty active on those. And Howes as well?
We have an account on Howes, but I haven't done anything in a very long time.
Yeah. It's pretty easy just to push stuff out to Facebook and Instagram these days.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, well, thank you very much for your time, Simone. Really appreciate it. And it's great to have you, people like you out there doing the professional work, but also, like you say, going and spending time educating people, doing talks and just spreading the message. So thank you for all the good work.
No, thank you. We need people like you to spread the love further and, reach lots of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully we will.
And that was Simone Schinkel there from Melbourne, Victoria. And her website is gruenecodesign.com.au. That's Gruen, G-R-U-E-N, ecodesign.com.au. Check it out. She's got some good projects to have a look at there and a growing number of passive house projects. What did you think of that one, Zach?
I thought it was great. I mean, she's also another thing that really came up a lot was just how she's developed this really fantastic practice, and also has been a mom the entire time, and is just the kind of all the things that she's juggling as she's in this, her adopted country, working to change the, an industry. So that's pretty impressive stuff.
Absolutely. And you're right. She is trying to change the industry, as are a lot of people working in this space. And it's something that I've heard from a number of designers, particularly from people who have either come from overseas, whether it be Europe or North America, or sometimes they're Kiwis or Aussies who go and do a bit of work or live a couple of years in other places, and they come back to what should be a relatively temperate, moderate climate, and they're freezing cold in the winter time because New Zealand houses, Australian houses, first of all, we don't have central heating, and they're typically not well insulated and just not very well. They're just differently constructed. We jokingly call our houses here in New Zealand wooden tents because they they're leaky, they let a lot of air through, they're cold. We have some pretty serious mold issues in both New Zealand and Australia. None of these are issues that are new to the world. It's just that we're sort of dragging behind a lot of other countries. And it takes people like Simone and other designers and architects, other industry professionals who know that there's a better way to influence the market and start producing some of these houses that we know that we can build. There's no reason for us not to build them, but it takes a little bit of time to change that market and to close that gap that she talked about, the cost gap.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think, I mean, that's really important work to be creating examples, both in the marketplace, but also as proof of concept for to show that what can be accomplished, so that hopefully regulation can start to develop and change. I mean, I think I was struck by her comment about, well, you know, it's just a reality that not everybody can afford to do a custom house. Yeah. And so in order for there to be really real change and for this, you know, the benefits of the health benefits and of course the climate mitigation benefits of passive house to really become widespread and mainstream, production builders need to take it on. And that's going to mean, regulation.
And some leading production builders, you know, some leading group home builders to really step up to that challenge and start producing. And I know this is being done in places. It has been done. We just need more of it so that we can get the quality and the speed and the affordability, sort of that holy grail triangle of performance, but at a decent cost as well. Because it's a bit of a it's a weird thing where so many houses are custom designed and built, but so few are touched by a real qualified architect. You know, a lot of our houses are designed by draftspeople or architectural designers that basically draw lines to meet the code, but aren't necessarily doing it in a really thoughtful way. And that's the value of an architect.
Yeah, no, true. And I think also what you're describing is about we need to get the flywheel moving, right? And get momentum and continue to accelerate that momentum.
Sounds like a job for the Passive House Accelerator.
Why? Why? Maybe we're certainly doing our best to help with it. So, and I think what you're also talking about is this, the sense of a flywheel and, you know, accelerating and getting some momentum going. And one of the ways that also can really happen more quickly, I think, is if we can articulate well the fact that passive house eliminates the performance gap. And so I think that there's, if we can really be clear in communicating that sustainable construction has lots of different facets, and there are lots of different green rating programs to go, you know, to take a whack at sustainability in buildings. But the one that knows how to really deliver on energy performance is passive house. So you can combine passive house with these other approaches if you that's great, but there really is no other system that provides a kind of predictable results where there's this really close correlation between what was modeled in the design and then the actual energy performance, particularly the thermal energy performance of the building. Yeah. And so we can skip, as new markets like Australia and New Zealand are adopting, trying to make this shift to high performance buildings, if we can skip the stage where we think we're doing green buildings, but we're actually creating poorly performing buildings, that would be great. And passive house can provide that pathway.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen some great presentations proving that that predictability, and basically showing that things like PHPP, the passive house planning package, the software that the designers use, is so much more predictable and reliable than a lot of the other energy modeling software packages out there. And I think that's got a lot to do with the detail that's required, but also some of the most important things that it measures, like air tightness and infiltration rates, which go above and beyond than just looking at thermal properties of a building. Anyway, we're geeking out on some of the technical aspects. We'll have to. I think we should do a show on some of that predictability performance. Get someone who really knows what they're talking about, and get them on the show to do a bit of a deep dive into that. In the meantime, there's quite a lot going on at the moment. Speaking about presentations, a couple of big conferences happening right now. In fact, with the International Passive House underway, what else is going on?
Well, yeah, we've got the International Passive House Conference going on. We've got the conference coming up in Australia, the South Pacific Passive House Conference.
South Pacific Passive House Conference coming up in second week of October.
We have the Passive House Maine conference coming up in a couple of weeks, and we're actually going to kick the keynote off at the Global Passive House Happy Hour in a couple of weeks.
Awesome.
FIAS has a bunch of educational programming underway or starting, and is also hosting a week of evening hootenannies that are like roundtable panels of architects and builders and other kind of groups of practitioners and folks involved in Passive House. So that's going to be really cool. Plataforma PEP is doing a conference in Spain. So lots of stuff happening around the world, and I'll include all the details about these events in the show notes as well. This week on Wednesday in North America and Thursday morning your time, in New Zealand, the Happy Hour presentation will feature Brandon Nicholson and Sloan Ritchie, who will speak about the Pax Futura project in Seattle, which is Seattle's first multifamily or first apartment building, Passive House apartment building. And also on October 8th, and we're still figuring out the exact name of this, but we're going to be hosting a roundtable of Passive House homeowners and occupants to talk about Passive House and the wildfires that we've been experiencing on the West Coast. And we hope to bring in a homeowner from your neck of the woods to talk about the bushfires and discuss the kind of the tweaks to the ventilation system and essentially extra filtration that homeowners have experimented in, what was working, what wasn't working, to try to get rid of the wildfire smoke, because it just is so much pollution this time around. So
really interesting stuff. A colleague of mine, Jesse Clark, was doing a presentation just yesterday, and we're talking about the control layers of a building. And typically we talk about water, vapor, air, moisture, and their thermal layers. But then he's saying, yeah, they've got to think about this extra layer of protection, which is protecting from embers in Australia, you know, protecting from anything that might fly around and then cause ignition inside the building envelope. So it's definitely causing significant impact on the way we design and the way we build buildings around the world.
Yeah, no kidding.
And you mentioned the Happy Hour. If people haven't joined us for the Passive House Accelerator Happy Hour, definitely do that. And there's more and more good reason to do that. You mentioned the incorporation of a keynote launch of the conference during the Happy Hour coming up, but it's also just a great way to listen to some awesome presentations. But also, the thing I like most about the Happy Hour is connecting with people, you know, having that chance to network in a virtual way, but I've already made some really great connections with people just in those little 3-minute breakout rooms. It's a really, really great format. So definitely head on over to the Passive House Accelerator website and sign up for the next Happy Hour. And if people want to get in touch with us, they can do that. Where, Zach? Where's the best place to get in touch with us for anything to do with podcast?
Yeah, our email address is podcast@passivehouseaccelerator.com.
Awesome. We'd love to get any feedback, comments, and also any ratings. If you can leave a rating and a review for us on Apple Podcasts, that would be great, because it helps increase the visibility of the podcast and spread the message, which is the whole point of what we're doing, really. We're just going to finish off by a quick shout out to some of the people who support the show and the accelerator. So do you want to lead us out with who we need to thank, Zach?
Yes, absolutely. So all of our work at the accelerator is made possible by our sponsors, and lots of generous support coming to make these programs happen. So our founding sponsors are Baxt Ingwe Architects, Mitsubishi Electric, RDH Building Science, Stocorp, and Zola Windows. Our stakeholder partner is NYSERDA, or the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. And our patron sponsors are 475 High Performance Building Supply, Morrison Hirschfield, and Partel.
Awesome. Well, thank you to them. Thank you for listening. And we look forward to being back again next week with another episode of Passive House Podcast.